You're listening to Upfront. I'm Brian Edwards Tekert. I want you to think back to that really hot week that we had here in the Bay Area in May. This is when San Francisco was breaking records. It topped 100 degrees in some parts of the city. And there were swarms of people who never thought they would need air conditioning living in the foggy city on the Pacific Ocean, running to those few air-conditioned oases that existed, like movie theaters, just to get out of the heat. Now, this is not just a matter of comfort. It's a matter of public safety. Heat waves kill people. And according to a new report out from the Union of Concerned Scientists, if you live here, you should get ready for a whole lot more. They started using climate models for different scenarios based on how much climate-forcing pollution we do or do not cut from our emissions, and tried to project out into the future not how high average temperatures are going to get, but how many days we're going to spend experiencing extreme heat, the kind of heat that can create a public health crisis. In the region we're part of, the Greater Southwest, that's in excess of 70 days per year. I'm joined now by one of the authors on that report. Christy Dahl is a senior climate scientist with the Union of Concerned Scientists. She joins us by Skype. Good morning.
Good morning to you.
Why don't you start by walking us through why you decided to measure this particular outcome of climate change, the number of days that we experience extreme heat?
So as you were just describing, Brian, extreme heat is dangerous and can even be deadly. Last year, extreme heat killed about 14 people in the Bay Area alone. And nationwide, the CDC statistics suggest that it kills about 600 people annually. We know that our climate has warmed in the past few decades, and these incidences of extreme heat are becoming not just more frequent, but more severe. So we wanted people to be able to see what's coming in the next 30 years, 70 years, so that they would have a chance to take action to steer our climate in a different direction. We decided to look at extreme heat specifically because that's when a lot of these public health crises emerge. And we saw that we didn't fully have the data that we needed as individuals or as communities to really understand the risks that we're going to be facing. The data we didn't have in particular was a metric of temperature and humidity together that's called the heat index, or the feels-like temperature. There were lots of studies that had looked at how extreme temperatures on their own will change in the coming decades, but we couldn't find any high-resolution nationwide studies looking at the heat index. And so we decided to focus on that, in part because that's what the National Weather Service uses as its basis for issuing heat advisories and excessive heat warnings to the general public.
On your maps of the nation, it looks like the Southeast really takes the worst walloping on this front.
That's right. So when we look at the absolute number of days with a really high heat index, say above 100 or above 105, the Southeast and Southern Great Plains regions will face the most frequent and most intense episodes of extreme heat, which is similar to what happens today. But it's really important to note that these are places that already have a high prevalence of air conditioning, for example, that help residents to cope with that kind of heat. When we look at regions like the Northeast, the Northwest, or even here in the Bay Area, we're much less equipped to deal with extreme heat. So while the absolute number of days of extreme heat we'll be facing, say by mid-century, is much lower than what they'll be facing in Texas or Florida, we're much less equipped to deal with it.
And of course, here in our region, extreme heat days are also extreme fire danger days.
That does tend to be the case, yes. And we've certainly seen days within the past year where there were wildfires elsewhere in the state that coincided with heat waves here in the Bay Area. And so you run into this situation where it's really hot outside, you don't have air conditioning in your home, so you want to open the windows so that you can cool down, but you really shouldn't because the air outside is so toxic.
Now, one of the things you kind of scrupulously did in the report was compare the consequences of inaction when it comes to reining in climate change and, well, I don't know if I'd say extreme action, but meeting the somewhat moderate goals that were set out in the Paris Climate Accord, that is limiting the overall rise in temperature to about 2 degrees Celsius. How much of a difference does it make? How different is that scenario from the business as usual?
One of the biggest surprises to us in doing this work was just how big a difference our emissions choices make, particularly when we look out to the late century timeframe, but even somewhat in that mid-century timeframe, say the year 2050. So our results showed that by meeting the primary goal of the Paris Agreement and capping future warming at or below 2 degrees Celsius, millions of people in the U.S. could avoid exposure to frequent dangerous levels of heat. Just as one example of that, by the end of the century, if we take no action to reduce our emissions, nearly 300 major cities across the country would experience a month or more of days with a heat index above 105 in an average year. That's a huge number of cities, and it includes places as far north as Wisconsin. But if we take rapid action to reduce emissions and we're able to limit future warming to 2 degrees C, it's only 85 major cities that would experience that frequent extreme heat. So that's still a major increase from the just three cities that experienced that level of heat in the country historically. But it's also a lot better than having 300 cities endure such heat.
So which of those two scenarios are we on a closer trajectory to now?
Unfortunately, our past emissions and our current emissions trajectory have us most closely aligned with what we would call the no action scenario. That's a scenario in which our emissions continue to rise through the end of the century. So it will take a monumental effort to change course, and yet the consequences of doing so would be so beneficial.
Christy, I know I've asked you this a couple of times before when we've spoken about other reports you've co-authored. How are you doing?
It's a good question. These results definitely had me awake at night as we were processing them, writing up the report. We've also published a peer-reviewed study. So I've been immersed with this data for many months now. And at first, I thought, well, this is just horrific. And how can we raise our children and hand them this future that's unrecognizable? But the more I started to focus on the possibility of creating a world where we limit future warming, the more I started to think, well, this is what we can do. You know, we may not be able to keep the climate exactly as it is right now, and yet we still have the ability to stave off the worst consequences. So that's how I'm sleeping at night these days.
Well, Christy Dahl, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thanks so much, Brian.
Christy Dahl is a senior climate scientist with the Union of Concerned Scientists. She is co-author of a report they just put out today, accompanied by a study published in Environmental Research Communications entitled Increased Frequency of and Population Exposure to Extreme Heat Index Days in the United States During the 21st Century.